My respectful obeisances to all the assembled Vaishnavas. We offer our sincere gratitude to all of you for being with us here this evening. The fourth day of our Braj Dham Yatra. We will begin by hearing an updated report on the health of His Holiness Srila Jaipatak Swami Maharaj from Raghunath Prabhu.
This afternoon, I spoke to Dr. P.P. Ashok, who is the neurophysician who is treating His Holiness Jaipataka Maharaj. He said that Maharaj was slightly drowsy this morning and therefore they decided to get another CT scan in the morning today. But there was no fresh development. There was no significant change. It was all right. But he said it is a cause of concern that after steadily improving for last 1 week, he is feeling drowsy again today. Yesterday, they had removed him from the ventilator for about 2 hours. Ventilator is a machine that assists in respiration. So they had weaned him off for 2 hours. But then he was uncomfortable, so they again put him back. He said that either today or tomorrow, doctors will be performing a tracheostomy. Tracheostomy is a small procedure, incision, so that the ventilator can directly be accessed from here. Because right now there are tubes going inside from the mouth, and that is very uncomfortable. Madhavananda Prabhu, our director from the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, he is of the opinion that when the tracheostomy is done, then Maharaj will be much more comfortable. So, there is no other adverse deterioration. But he is saying that it appears that Maharaj will be on the ventilator for quite some time. It will take time before he can start breathing normally. So, this is the update on Maharaj's health. Hare Krishna.
Let us begin by offering our sincere prayers for Srila Jaipatak Swami Maharaj. Which of you have visited during our yatra as of yet? Mahavan. Please raise your arms and say Hari Bol. I'd like to begin by continuing the beautiful pastimes that Krishna performed there. In Mahavan Gokul, on the banks of Yamuna, is Brahmandagat. We were discussing how the elderly gopis were regularly coming to lodge complaints against Krishna for stealing and eating butter and yogurt. Shukadev Goswami carries on his narration. Wherein now the cowherd boys, Krishna's most intimate associates and friends, who were his accomplices in stealing butter and yogurt, now they were complaining to Mother Yashoda against him. Even Lord Balaram. They claimed that, oh Mother, today in a secluded place we have seen Krishna ate dirt. When Yashoda Mai heard this, she was very much disturbed. She was never disturbed when she heard the stories of Krishna stealing butter and yogurt. Rather, she was very happy to hear that, because the butter and yogurt were very nutritious, cooked by the hands of gopis or prepared by hands of gopis. But for a mother to hear that her son is eating clay, she became very much worried for his health. And she took Krishna by the hand and held it quite tightly, because she was afraid that Krishna would run away. And with her finger, she chastised him. Gopal, why? Why have you eaten dirt? Gopal said, I never ate dirt. Mother Yashoda said, but your best friends are telling me that you ate dirt. And even Balaram, your brother, he's always on your side. Whatever you've done, he's always been with you. Even he's telling that you ate dirt. Krishna said, Mother, they are all liars. This has never happened. If you do not believe me, then why don't you open my mouth and look inside? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he tells us that this passage of Bhagavatam, the glory of the absolute truth when he tells lies. For most people, this is a serious contradiction. How can the supreme source of all truth, the absolute truth, be untruthful? It is not possible. Krishna is always truthful. His lies are higher than the highest of all high truths. Why? Because as a little child, it's natural for a child to speak like this. But more than that, the purpose of his speaking in this way is to nourish the love of his mother, Yashoda. The ecstatic love of Vatsalya Rasa, or parental affection, and all other loving relationships or rasas, they spring from prema, or pure love. Prema dwells within the heart of a pure devotee. And Krishna, he inspires and awakens that prema by his natural quality of his affection for his devotees. Therefore, his name is Bhaktavatsal. One who is infinitely affectionate to his devotees. It is that affection of Krishna for the devotee that awakens the pure love within a devotee's heart. Therefore, Krishna telling this little lie was an attribute of his being Bhaktivatsala. It was meant to awaken and intensify Mother Yashoda's love. Therefore, our beloved Acharyas say, it is not a fault. Rather, it is the crown jewel of all spiritual ornaments upon Krishna. Yashoda Mai, very much worried for Krishna's health. She said, Gopal, if it is true that you didn't eat dirt, then open your mouth and let me see what is inside. Now this was difficult because he did eat dirt. And if Yashoda Mai looked inside, she would see the dirt. And he would become very much the object of her chastisement. Krishna was very fearful. He was trembling. His eyes were moving around very restlessly. How could the power that is fear by fear personified be afraid? We sing this song by Govinda Das. Bajahure mana srinandanandana abhaya charanadha vindare. My dear mind, please meditate and worship Srinandanandana. Because only by doing so will you become fearless. Fear is a predominating quality of this material existence. Why is there fear? Because of the uncertainty of nature. We do not know what will come to us from one moment to the next. Disease, failure, humiliation, loss of loved ones, death, mistakes. Anything can come upon anyone, anytime. In fact, these things are for sure. It's just a matter of when. We love someone, either we're going to die or they're going to die or something's going to happen in between. Everything we worked so hard for is going to be ripped away from us. As long as we have any attachment to this material body or any of the objects of this material body, there has to be fear. Dukalaya mashashvatam. This is a miserable place, a place full of fear because everything is temporary. But if we just worship the son of Nanda, Lord Sri Krishna, we will become fearless. Because Krishna is eternal. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. His form, his personality, his pastimes, his characteristics, everything are everlasting. And they are unlimited. When we focus our consciousness and take shelter of Krishna, we rise above the dualities of material nature. Krishna protects his devotee from all fear and from death itself. So how is it that that person who could make every living entity fearless by his association is exhibiting intense emotions of fear? Hare Krishna. This is the beauty of Vrindavan. We are afraid because of our material attachments. Krishna is afraid
because
by his own sweet will, he is conquered by the love of his mother. He finds greater pleasure in being chastised by the residents of Vrindavan, being scolded by the gopis and gopas, than he does by hearing Vedic hymns praising him. Even when those hymns are sung by Brahma or Shiva or the demigods or the greatest of Brahmins. Because Krishna's bhaktivatsal, he's very affectionate to his devotees. Krishna showed the Virat Rupa to Arjuna, and he made even the greatest warrior on earth, Arjuna, afraid. But the source of that Virat Rupa is trembling in fear of Yashoda, because she's about to look in his mouth and see dirt. Hare Krishna. Krishna opened his mouth. As he opened his mouth, his desire to be protected from Mother Yashoda's anger incited his Aishwarya Shakti, his opulent energy, to manifest within his mouth the Brahmanda, the whole universe. Yashoda Mai looked down into his mouth and even into his belly, and she saw all the planets of the universe, all of the mountains, all of the oceans, all of the moving and unmoving beings. She saw all the trees and all the forests, all the stars. She saw how karma was implicating all the living entities within the universe. She saw the personification of the three modes of material nature completely controlling and subjugating everything and everyone. She saw the power of time. She even saw, deep down inside, herself looking in Krishna's mouth. The amazing thing. How big is the universe? It's beyond calculation by our instruments. But it was all contained within his mouth, which is this big. And it's not that the universe was concentrated. You know, when we want to make something big, small, we concentrate it to put it in a small place. It was not concentrated in his mouth. It was the full-fledged, it was the whole universe within this little mouth. Is that possible? No, it is not possible. But Krishna has achintya shakti. He could do everything. He could do anything. Srila Prabhupada tells that story about the Brahmin and the cobbler who met Narada Muni. The Brahmin was kind of arrogant. He said to Narada Muni, "When you see Narayan, ask him when I will go back to Godhead." And then Narada Muni saw the little cobbler. He was just beating on some shoe. Brahman was teaching so many students the Vedas. The cobbler said, "When you see Lord Narayan, please ask him, will I ever go back to Godhead? Will he ever accept me?" So Narada Muni asked. And Narayan said, "Tell the Brahmin, millions of births, still he will not come back." The cobbler, he will come back in this very birth. Narada Muni was wondering what this means. The Lord said, if they ask what I was doing, tell them I was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. So he met the Brahmin and told him, after millions of births, you may not go back even then. And the Brahmin was insulted. He screamed at Narada Muni, nonsense, bogus, get out from here. How dare you speak like that to me? You see my disciples, you see my vast learning, how many yajnas I've performed, out from here. If you saw the Lord, what was he doing? He was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. Get nonsense. You never saw him. You saw the cobbler. You'll be going back in this life. Ah, so merciful is the Lord. I do not deserve ever to go back, but he's giving me this by his kindness only. What was he doing? Please tell me. Threading elephant through eye of needle. Oh, how wonderful. Narada Muni said, do you believe he was actually doing that? He said, of course. This banyan tree we're sitting under, so big, so wide. Look at this seed. My Lord is so great, he can put an entire banyan tree in this seed. That is the Lord's inconceivable potency. Now in our modern technology, when I was a teenage boy, we used to listen to records. They were about this big. And you turn them around, and they put a needle on it, and it would make all these songs. And if you had 500 records, it would practically take up your whole room. But now, they're condensing all those songs in these little iPod things. You can have like 1,000 records this big. Now to somebody who, if someone was like Muchukunda and went to sleep in 1960 and then woke up in 2008 and they see somebody with 1,000 records and something this big, they think, this is a Chinta Shakti. This is inconceivable potency. But computers used to be the size of huge rooms. Now they're this big. This is just a very, very insignificant trace of a material power given by Krishna. But Krishna's powers are inconceivable. And this is one of the first principles of understanding God, is you cannot understand him. He could do anything. He could do everything. His mouth can remain this big, and he can fit the entire universe inside of it. And simultaneously, the same universe is outside of him. How is that possible? A whole universe is inside of him, and the exact same universe is outside of him. And it's not two different universes. Mother Yash... Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. This is very inconceivable what's happening. Are you trying to show your inconceivable potencies? Hare Krishna.
When she saw the entire universe in the mouth of her little son,
She couldn't believe what she was seeing. In her mind, she began to argue with herself. First she thought, am I dreaming? No. My eyes are wide open. I'm not dreaming. Am I being illusioned by the demigods? Why would the demigods try to put in illusion an insignificant cowherd girl like me? Of course not. Well, maybe I'm suffering due to some mental derangement. But this is not possible because I'm quite stable. My mind is quite peaceful. Or perhaps it's this. Perhaps my son has mystical potencies. That's what Garga Muni said. He said that my son would perform unbelievable activities and that he was as good as Lord Narayan. Could that be the reason? But then she rejected that. How is that possible? As good as Narayan. When he's hungry, he cries. When he's thirsty, he cries. When I chastise him, he cries. Even now, whatever I'm seeing in his mouth, imagine Krishna. This is so beautiful. He's showing the entire universe within his mouth to Mother Yashoda. And while he's showing her the mouth, he's still trembling in fear from her. And there's tears in his eyes. When there's lightning or thunder, Krishna will run to me and jump in my arms and say, Mother, please protect me. What does Garga Muni know? But then she began to... She couldn't figure out how this is possible. So like any devotee who just can't figure out what's happening or why, she took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When things happen in our lives that we just cannot understand, that's a wonderful blessing. At that point, we have no other alternative but just to surrender to the Lord. With folded hands, Mother Yashoda began to offer prayers to Lord Narayan. Oh Vishnu, you are the Supreme. Please give me shelter. But most of all, please Krishna, please take away all these disturbances from my beloved son Krishna. I don't know what's happening to him, but please, please protect him. And then she became very philosophical while she was praying to Lord Vishnu. It is by your all-powerful illusory potency that I am thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband. It is only by Maya that I'm thinking that Krishna is my son. And I'm thinking that I'm the queen of all of Brajabhumi and all of the gopas and all of the gopis are my subjects and all the wealth of Vrindavan belongs to Nanda Maharaj and me. And I'm thinking, due to your illusion, Lord Vishnu, that I'm protecting Krishna. I and mine. This is how Maya works. But actually, Krishna is your son, Lord Vishnu. And you are the one protecting him. As she was speaking in this philosophical way, Krishna was listening. And he began to think, if she thinks like this, then who's going to feed me her breast milk? If she's thinking like this, how will she embrace me and cuddle me and kiss me with motherly affection? I don't like this. With these thoughts, Krishna covered Yashoda Mai over by Yoga Maya. And just by his sweet smile, Yashoda Mai completely forgot everything she had just seen. Just as sometimes you have a dream, and as soon as you wake up, you completely forget what that dream was. In this way, Lord Krishna, covered with the veil of Yoga Maya, Mother Yashoda's understanding of his supreme opulence, and completely filled her with sweet, innocent, motherly love. Mother Yashoda, she would think when these things would happen that sometimes Krishna kills demons like Putana or Shakatasura or Trinavarta, or sometimes he knocks down these big Arjuna trees, and people can't understand, how is this happening? Did Krishna do it? Is this just a coincidence? He happens to always be there right then when it happens? Gargamuni said he's Narayan. And even some of the gopas and gopis believe him. But I know better. Because if Krishna does not see me for even one moment, he is greatly disturbed. And if I don't see Krishna for one moment, I am greatly disturbed. Therefore, let them think whatever they want. But Krishna is only an ordinary child who is my beloved son. And our own mutual understanding is the proof to this truth. Sri Yashoda Mayi Ki Jai. Shukadev Goswami tells the glory of Mother Yashoda in a beautiful verse. Those who study the three Vedas, they worship the absolute truth as Yajna Purusha. In the Sankhya philosophy, he is worshipped as the Purusha. In the Yoga Sutras, he is called Paramatma. And in the Pancharatra, he is worshipped as Bhagavan. But that same supreme absolute truth, Mother Yashoda considers her own beloved ordinary child. And Sukadev Goswami tells that Parikshit Maharaj, or actually Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadev Goswami, after hearing this amazing story, what did Nanda and Yashoda do in their past life to get Krishna as their own son, whereas he's sucking the milk from her breast? And Sukadev Goswami tells, actually, Nanda and Yashoda are Nitya Siddhas. They descend from the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna. They are his eternal mother and father in the spiritual world. But in this world, expansions of them were named Drona and Dara, the best of the Basus. And they performed long, long austerities to Lord Brahma. And Brahma offered them any benediction. And they wanted to assist the Lord in his pastimes. The only blessing they asked for, let our son be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who descends into this world and performs such wonderful, unbelievable pastimes that anyone who hears them will be completely purified of all material attachments, will be liberated from all sufferings, and will attain the ultimate bliss of pure devotional service. Let us facilitate and assist the Lord to deliver all the conditioned souls within your creation. And that Drona and Dara, they entered into the bodies of Nanda and Yashoda to be Krishna's own mother and father. The residents of Vrindavan, their love for Krishna was so much. Krishna became like their puppet. The gopis would order Krishna, dance, and Krishna would dance like their puppet. Sometimes they would see, lift up that wooden plank, and Krishna would lift up the wooden plank and show them how I can do it. And they'd say, well, lift up that wooden plank, but it was a heavy wooden plank. And he would move like he was really, really trying to lift it, but he couldn't lift it. And they would all laugh at him, oh, you can't even lift up that plank. And Krishna would show them his great heroic strength as a little baby child. One day, a Pulinda woman, a woman from the forest, came into Vrindavan selling fruits. She called out, if anyone wants to buy my fruits, please come. Krishna wanted her to be an object of his love. Srila Prabhupada explains, in those days there was real exchange. Today, paper exchange of money and credit and all of these things. We see how unstable it is, the way the economies all over the world are fluctuating and going through serious crisis. Why? Because the very basis of currency and exchange is speculation. But in those days, people would barter with what was real. You would exchange grains for fruits. And one person would get fruits and one person would get grains. Or things like that. So Krishna would see his mother and father doing like that. So he filled his hand with some grains and ran to the fruit vendor. But as he was running, because his hands were very small and very soft, the grains were falling one by one out of his hands. And by the time he came to the fruit vendor, there was just a couple little grains in his soft little lotus hand. And he looked up at the fruit vendor and said to the lady, please give me fruits. And she looked at him. Her heart overflooded with affection. She wanted to give Krishna everything. She gave Krishna her heart. And she put in his hands as many fruits as he could possibly hold. Then Krishna smiled at her. She turned around, and her whole basket was filled with gold and rubies and diamonds and emeralds, precious jewels. But more than that, the basket of her heart was overflowing with prema bhakti. Because of those few fruits that she gave to Krishna with affection, Krishna awarded her the ultimate goal of life. What jnanis cannot achieve by millions of births studying the scriptures, what yogis cannot achieve after millions of births of austerity and yama, niyama, pranayama, and all of those things, what even devotees, so difficult to achieve. she achieve that ultimate goal of unmotivated, uninterrupted love for Krishna in that one moment? Srila Prabhupada cites Maharaj Katvanga. He asked the demigods, after fighting for them, they offered him a boon. He asked, "When will I die? That's all I want to know, so I could be prepared." They said, "In the next moment." Immediately he fixed his mind in the all-beautiful form of the Supreme Lord. And he attained perfection in that one moment. Here we find this fruit vendor attained the perfection of life in one moment, because she had that pure desire to please Krishna. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. That if one offers me with the love and devotion, even a fruit, a flower, or some water, I will accept it. Krishna accepts the devotion, the purpose, the intent of what we offer. That is the perfection of our lives. There are many examples given. If you water the root of the tree, the whole tree is flourished. Krishna is the root, the essence of our very existence. The example is also given that if you decorate your face very nicely, then if you look in the mirror, your reflection will be decorated very nicely. Because the reflection has its origin in the face. So similarly, because we are all part and parcels of Krishna, we are all emanations of Krishna, we are all reflections of Krishna in tiny little forms. If we give pleasure to Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate and we ourselves will enjoy the ultimate satisfaction. That is the mystery of bhakti. One day Krishna was playing with his friends. And when Krishna would play with his friends, it was very, very intense absorption because of love. They would play every possible game. But it really didn't matter what they were playing. What mattered was they were together. The friends could not give up Krishna's association. They just loved him so much. And because of their love, Krishna could not give up their association because he loved them so much. So one day Rohini came out and called out, "Balaramji, Krishna, already you're late for lunch. Come home." But they completely ignored her and played. So Rohini went to tell Yashoda Mai, knowing that Yashoda Mai's love, her affection, is supreme in parental relationship. So Mother Yashoda came out and she called, "Krishna Balaram, come, why are you still playing? It's already hours after your lunchtime. Aren't you hungry? How will you maintain your health? All your other friends, they are nicely decorated and recently bathed. Look at you, you are covered with dust. Come home." And besides that, because they weren't even listening to her, besides that, she said, "Nanda Maharaj is sitting at the table at home and he refuses to eat until you're eating with him. So don't you care about your own father? Are you going to leave him hungry?" And Yashoda Mai took Krishna and Balaram by the hands and brought them home. In this way, life goes on in the spiritual world. One day, the elder brother of Nanda Maharaj, Upananda, called all the leaders of the Brijabasis together and expressed his deep concern that this Mahavan forest is very dangerous. That Rakshashi Putana had come, somehow or other Krishna was saved. And then that big cart fell and everything fell around Krishna, but nothing happened to him. And then this Trinavarta, and now these big Arjuna trees falling, they could have killed our children. It's not safe here. Today, immediately, we should move out from this place. And I know just the place to go. It is very peaceful and beautiful. Between Mahaban and Nandeshwar is the forest of Vrindavan. Now, previously coming to Mahaban, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains they were living in Nandeshwar, which is Nandagaon. But Aristasura started living around there. So they moved out to Mahaban. And also they weren't having children, so they thought Mahaban, being near the Yamuna, would be more auspicious place for Nanda and Yashoda to have children. Upananda said, in the Vrindavan forest is Govardhan Hill and the river Yamuna. Let us leave today. So immediately they packed up their ox carts, and the cowherd men surrounded the gopis who were on their ox carts, and they were holding bows and arrows and clubs to protect them as they traveled across the Yamuna to the forest of Vrindavan. And there they put their carts in a semicircle and made a little community. The place Chatikar, I believe, is very close to Vrindavan town where they began. It was there, or it was here, in Vrindavan forest, that Krishna and Balaram wandered about. And how much pleasure they enjoyed, especially when they saw Govardhan Hill and the dark blue, fragrant current of the river Yamuna. When they were 3 years old, they insisted that they wanted to take care of the cows. Nanda Maharaj would do anything to please Krishna. So he gave them the charge of the calves. Now the cows would go out early morning and come in at sunset. But the calves would leave quite a little after the cows, and they would come back earlier. And they would not go so far away either. Calves. So at 3 years old, Krishna and Balaram, with all their little friends, would go out every morning to herd the calves. Each of them would have a rope over their shoulders to tie the calves if it was required. And they would play so many games. Actually, the Vrindavan pastures and forests were so plush with crystal clear, nourishing waters and fruits and herbs and green, fragrant grasses. And the calves could not give up the association of Krishna and Balaram. So the gopas really didn't have much of anything to do except play. The calves would always be close by, and they'd always find nice water to drink and nice grasses and leaves to eat. And the children would just play all day. Calf herding was just an excuse. But Krishna loved the calves, and the calves loved Krishna. They would go to forests and see fresh fruits in the trees. And the little cowherd boys would pick up rocks and throw it at the fruits and hit it and would fall. And then they'd jump up and down and cheer and share the fruits amongst their other cowherd boys. Sometimes they would get the amalaki fruit. Does everyone know what an amalaki fruit is? How many people know what is amalaki fruit? Well, they would use them as balls and play all kinds of sports with them. And sometimes they would put blankets over their bodies and imitate, they would pretend to be cows and bulls and fight with each other. One day, they went to the forest of Bandiravan. Some of you went there today? Was that your group, Govinda Prabhu? Huh? Radha Gopinath Prabhu and Madan Gopal have gone to Bandiravan. They were playing in the area of Bandiravan, herding the calves, playing so many enjoyable games, when a demon sent by Kamsa disguised himself as one of Krishna's little innocent calves. How deceiving. This little calf was so sweet looking, so innocent, so tender, just frolicking around with the other calves. But his intention was to murder Krishna and Balaram. As he was just, this calf was just frolicking around, mixing with the other calves, but with such evil intentions in his mind, so duplicitous. Krishna's the Paramatma in everyone's heart. He knows your intentions. He knows who you are. You can't hide from Krishna. You could pretend to be a really sweet devotee, but if you have cruelty or anger in your heart, Krishna knows it. You could pretend to be very humble, offering your obeisances to someone, but if you're in your mind, you're thinking, I hope you fall down. Krishna knows it. So as they were playing with their games and the calf was eating his grass, Krishna said to Balaram, this is a demon. So both of them very quietly walked behind Vatsasura. He didn't even detect that they were nearby. Krishna would just very quietly walked in the grass, came right behind him. He grabbed him by the tail and the back legs and whirled him around. Whirled him so many times that Vatsasura lost his life just from being dizzy by Krishna's powerful little hand. He was only about 3 years old. He was, and then he threw Vatsasura into the sky, and Vatsasura landed right on a kapita tree. Why did Krishna aim him toward that kapita tree? Does anyone know? Because there were really nice kapita fruits on the tree. But they were very high and difficult to get. And he knew all his friends really wanted to eat those kapita fruits. So, and Vatsasura died and landed on the tree, and the tree fell down, and all the kapita fruits came off the tree, and the boys started. When he hit the tree, he assumed his original form as a big demon. And the demigod showered flowers, and the boys were jumping up and down and clapping and crying out, "Well done, well done, well done." And then Krishna said, "Let us eat the kapita fruits." And they had a nice picnic in Bandiravan. Vatsasura represents the anartha of a childish mentality too easily influenced by bad association. Very dangerous propensity in a neophyte devotee, that we really must pray to Krishna and chant his names to save us from. Bad association. We have to understand things maturely, soberly. Just like Vatsasura appeared like a little calf, very innocent and very friendly. But actually his intentions were deadly. In the same way, if we have a childlike mentality, we can see even a type of association that could cause the ruination to our spiritual life as something very nice. We don't take it seriously. Srila Prabhupada warned us. He said, "The trouble with you Western boys and girls, and because all of you in India have been Westernized, it applies equally to you." He said, "The problem with all you Western boys and girls is you do not have sufficient fear of Maya. Maya is very powerful. For non-devotee people, Maya just grabs them. She doesn't have to disguise herself. But for a devotee who understands some philosophy, who's associated with devotees, we understand. There's the material world and there's a spiritual world. We understand the laws of karma to some extent. We understand what's favorable and what's unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. But Maya will disguise herself. Maya will try to convince us that she's all right. Oh, you've been chanting 16 rounds for so many years. Don't be a fanatic. Yes. Don't worry about it. So Maya within our mind can induce us like that. Or she can induce us, "You haven't watched television for so long, but this is a good show. Really, won't hurt you. Not only that, you'll learn more about how material nature works, and then you'll be able to preach better." And then you watch the television show, and you think, "God, I really learned a lot. Now I really know what the people out there are thinking, so I can preach to them better." She said, "You see? You see? I told you, I'm your friend. Watch another show, and another show, and another show." And soon you're just sitting in front of a television eating potato chips. Very dangerous. Through sexual attractions. Just a little bit. It's not so bad. But soon you're completely consumed by it. We work. Fruit of activities, perhaps. And we think more and more money, greed. And I can't tell you how many of my God brothers have just had this awakening in their heart.
that I'm going to work and I'm going to make millions of dollars and I'm going to build temples and I'm going to fund the book fund and I'm going to fund the devotees, and devotees won't have to do anything anymore. I'm going to support them. But in the process, you know, I'll get married and I won't have time to channel my rounds and I won't have time to really... and to do all this, I may not be able to follow all the regulative principles, but this is a higher service. And in almost every case, they stop chanting. They're not following the principles. They don't have the association. And they can't even make any money. What happens? Maya deludes us. This childlike mentality of believing the false promises of Maya and the associations that she's putting faith in, the association that she sends, is the presence of Vatsasura within our hearts. And we should let Krishna just whirl him around and throw him in a kapita tree. And how do we do that? By sincerely having fear of Maya, and with that fear, to never stop taking shelter of the holy names. One day, Krishna and Gopas were herding calves. They came to the forest of Kadiravan. There was a beautiful reservoir of water. It was such a nice day. So the Gopas directed the calves to drink that water. After all the calves drank the water to their heart's content, then the gopas came next and they drank the water. It tasted like nectar. As they were drinking the water, they saw just close by this extraordinary demon. He was huge, like a mountain peak that had fallen from the sky after being hit by a thunderbolt. He was in the form of a massive duck with a sharp, pointed, long beak. He was sent by Kamsa. His name, Bakasura. He was brother of Putana. Immediately, before anyone could see what was happening or how it was happening, Bakasura leaped upon them and swallowed Krishna. When Krishna was in the throat of Bakasura, the demigods cried out, "Alas!" And Balaram and the cowherd boys, seeing Krishna in that condition, they fell unconscious. Now one may ask, why didn't Lord Balaram kill that demon? The reason is because Lord Balaram had such affection for Krishna as his brother. He was so overwhelmed seeing Krishna in that condition that he fainted. It was Krishna's arrangement. So now Krishna is in the throat of Bakasura. Krishna's body is so... He was only a few years old. He's so small. And so soft, so tender. When Yashoda Mai would touch his beautiful bluish skin, it would, wherever she would touch, it would kind of, so soft it would turn pink where she touched it. so tender, so soft, so sweet.
But Krishna tells in Gita, yegatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham.
As you approach me, I will reciprocate and reveal myself accordingly.
To the devotees, Krishna's body is like a puppet of butter, it is explained. That's how soft.
Just want to embrace it and squeeze it and embrace it and love it.
But for Bakasura, because he approached Krishna with a cunning, deceitful envy within his throat, Krishna, his body was like a thunderbolt.
It was hard like rock and burning hot. Krishna's body was so hot.
From his body comes the Brahman effulgence. A mere reflection of Krishna's body is Krishna's Surya Narayan. He's the Paramatma within the sun.
And from Krishna, from that Surya Narayan, the sun rays are emanating and giving heat and light to the universe.
So Krishna manifested that aspect.
Bakasura was in absolute agony. His throat was burning. Suddenly, he vomited and Krishna came out.
And Krishna was completely clean and nice, even though he was in the throat of this demon. And he landed on the ground, and Bakasura, with his sharp beak, attacked Krishna, tried to stab him.
Krishna dodged his attack. Baka kept stabbing and stabbing and stabbing, and Krishna was dodging and playing, and everyone was watching. This was a very exciting event.
Suddenly, Krishna, with those little tender lotus petal hands,
he grabbed the beak of Bakasura and pulled it open. He opened it, stretched it more and more and more, and the Bakasura was, he was a mountain in size, and Krishna was this big. It was just, and then, and the demon was, it was a big fight, and Krishna went, and just bifurcated, just like a little child takes a virana, piece of grass, and rips it in half, as effortlessly as that. And the demon laid there, dead.
Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki. Balaram and the Gopas embraced Krishna as if he had just returned from the dead. And they all returned. They gathered their calves together and returned to Braj. And when they came to the village, by the time they arrived, the cowherd boys had already composed wonderful poetry glorifying Krishna's killing Bakasura. Whatever Krishna did, they would spontaneously, instantly compose poetry and sing it for everybody there. And soon the whole Vrindavan was reciting the beautiful poems of the glories of Krishna's daily activities. The Brijabasis were struck with wonder. One day, as all the residents of Vrindavan were constantly discussing Krishna's pastimes with one another, some older cowherd men came from a distant place. And they couldn't believe. Everyone was just talking about family and children. They said to Nanda and Upananda and Abhinanda, Sunanda, Nanda, Nandana, "What are you people? Don't you understand the goal of life?
is liberation and understanding Lord Narayan, you should be discussing spiritual subjects. You should be discussing Vedic knowledge, detachment, and the Supreme Lord Narayan. Why are you wasting so much of your time just talking about your family and children day and night? When Nanda and the cowherd men heard this, they just left. They were not interested in anything except filling their hearts with the remembrance of Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has given us the means by which it is possible for all of us through the congregational chanting of the holy name. Should I continue? Thank you. When Lord Krishna was about five years old, still in charge of Nanda Maharaj's calves, one day he decided to have a special picnic with the gopas. They would leave very early in the morning. And he asked Mother Yashoda to cook special preparations for him and all of his friends. That morning, Krishna got up quite early. Actually, the gopas, they just love Krishna so much. They would be with Krishna herding the calves in the morning, through the afternoon, and then they'd have to come home. And they just couldn't give up the association of Krishna, nor with the calves. It was just so painful. A moment was like 12 years or more. It was like a millennium to be not seeing Krishna. Sometimes when they would get home, Mother Yashoda would bathe Krishna, give him some prasad, and then the cowherd boys would just come running to Krishna's house to discuss some urgent matter about herding the calves. And they would joke with him, and they would play with him. And as far as they were concerned, they wanted to do that all night. Yashoda Mai would have to send them home. Please go home, go home. Your mothers are waiting. Krishna needs to take rest. He needs to sleep. And they would want to talk and joke with him 24 hours a day. Somehow or other, she would send them home. But the gopas, to stay away from Krishna all night long, very difficult. In the middle of the night, they just thought, they would wake, they wouldn't even sleep usually. They would just run to Krishna's house and say, it's time, Krishna, let's go out and herd the calves. Yashoda would run out and say, what are you talking? Why are you blowing your buffalo halls and calling Krishna? It's midnight. They'd look in the sky and say, oh, it is, that's right. They're so eager to be with Krishna. They loved Krishna. And as much as it was difficult for them to be without Krishna for a moment, it was equally difficult for Krishna to be without his cowherd boys for a moment. That was the nature of their love. So on this day, it was very special, because Krishna made a nice arrangement that early in the morning, they would go out for a special picnic of prasad and take their calves with them. So Krishna got up early and he took a bath, and then he blew his buffalo horn to call all of his friends.
But none of them were sleeping. They were already awake. They were just waiting all night for this picnic. And they all came running out of their homes. That day happened to be Balaram's birthday. So Rohini Devi kept him back. In the Vedic culture, the way you celebrate your birthday is to give. In the Western culture, the way you celebrate your birthday is to take. Yes? Little children on their birthday, they expect so many birthday gifts. Yes? Like little parties, the children and everyone brings a gift. And the parents give a gift. And sometimes you're really happy with your gift, but other times you're thinking, this is not the gift I wanted. But in the Vedic culture, see how Rohini, how she celebrated Balaram's birthday. She kept him home so that he could personally give in charity to the Brahmins. Given charity to the gopas and the gopis. The Brahmins would chant mantras, they would do yajnas for him to invoke auspiciousness, to invoke the blessings of God. That's the greatest gift we can offer to our child, is to somehow or other invoke the protection and the blessings of the Supreme Lord upon them. So Balaram was kept back to give in charity to the Brahmins on his birthday. And Krishna and the Gopas, they went out to perform their daily pastime of herding the calves through the forests and pastures of Vrindavan. Each Gopa had a stick for a little stick for herding the calves. And on that day, they had special pots on ropes, on two ends of sticks, and they were carrying it on their shoulders. And that was the special prasad that Yashoda Mai and the other cowherd ladies cooked for them for that special feast. There were so many gopas, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys that went out that day. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how many calves each cowherd boy had. Sukadev Goswami says each boy had unlimited calves. He said each boy has specifically asankhya. Asankhya means one followed by 17 zeros. Now, for those of you who are mathematicians, Namananda, how much is that? It's unlimited. That's how many lakhs of boys, each with unlimited calves. And they were in a forest that was only 32 square miles. So the natural question that an empiric student of mathematics would ask is, how is it possible to get hundreds and thousands of boys each with unlimited calves in 32 square miles? The reason Krishna did it like this is so that we could think like that. What is the use of God coming to earth if he does things according to our considerations of what's possible? Huh? This makes sense. Let us challenge the empiric thinkers. You're thinking, how is it possible
that 1 plus 17 zeros after it, multiplied by hundreds and thousands. How to organize a herd of cows like that? We have 4,000 people on this pilgrimage. And we're trying to take all of you around the forests of Vrindavan. And Sanat Kumar Prabhu and Radhakun Prabhu and Sri Chaitanya Prabhu and some of the other devotees who are organizers, they spent several months planning for this. What is it, 76 buses or something like that? 77. Huh? 87? That sounds pretty close to Asankhya. By our calculation, that's quite Asankhya. That's a lot. Unlimited. 87 buses. Anyways, they've been planning this, taking you, and we want to take you to Bandiravan and Mahavan and Madhuban and Talavan, and we have to break you up into three different groups because it's just so complicated to bring you all to one. And these people have been organizing yatras for 20 years. What to speak of feeding prasad? You all have to come back here. Now Krishna is in the same Vrindavan forest, 32 square miles, and he has hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys with trillions of calves, each one. How to organize that? How to manage that? And the amazing thing is never, ever, in all of those days, even though all these calves and all these cowherd boys, they never stepped on each other's feet. It's true. It's in the Shastra. The calves were so conscious of Krishna and Balaram's lotus feet that they never, ever stepped on them. Or any of the other gopas. Was perfectly, and there was no organization. They were just playing. It was blissful. So the challenge to the empiric philosophers, you are saying, how is it possible so many people could be and so many animals in one little area? Impossible. Mythology. Symbolic something or other is in your scriptures, but we can't believe it's literal. How is it possible for God to come on earth and not do wonderful things like this? That's the real challenge. We're seeing miracles every day, every tree. How is it possible you, Mr. Empiric Philosopher, you were just a little seed in your father's body and you somehow or other just streamed into a mother and then all of a sudden now you're a big empiric philosopher? You were just a wet little seed. Couldn't even see you under a microscope. That's Krishna's inconceivable power. So when the Supreme Absolute Truth, the original form of God, the source of all avatars, comes to this world, he's going to do things that are so wonderful, and instead of doubting his wonderful activities, we simply fall in love with him when we hear his wonderful activities. And we forever want to go on glorifying his holy names.